ETC is go.
Backup, this is go.
ETC is go.
Copy, this is go.
Houston flight is go.
Pilot go.
STM is go.
Safety comp is go.
STU is go.
LRD is go.
SRO is go.
CDR is go.
Launch director NTD, our launch team is ready to proceed at this time.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Site Patriots has a message for liberals and the mainstream media.
You can't handle the truth.
So, buckle up, snowflakes, because we're about to deliver the politically direct best in conservative commentary, news, and investigative reports. We're telling the truth, and we're not gonna stop. Okay, liberals, back under the bridge with the rest of your fellow trolls, and oh yeah, thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots.
They are special, special people
on RSPRadio1.com. Welcome to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Greg Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor. It's Tuesday night, the 2nd of April. Welcome to it. Good evening, Diane.
Good evening, Craig, and how are you?
I'm good. I can't believe it's April already.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it seems like we just started March.
What is it, 9 months till Christmas, 10 months to Christmas?
Have a rest.
Hey, it'll be in the stores next month.
I'm surprised it's not in the stores now.
That's true.
It seems like that gets earlier and earlier every year.
It does. It absolutely does. And that takes, you know, all the excitement. It just turns holiday season into one commercial operation.
Yeah, and I don't know about other people. I get sick of it. I mean, if you started all the Christmas stuff right after Thanksgiving, like the next day, I'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when you start months in advance, by the time Thanksgiving rolls around, I'm sick of Christmas.
Yeah. Well, I never do anything until the day after Thanksgiving, but everything goes up the day after Thanksgiving, and it comes down on January 1st. Well, my husband is a vegetable watching, you know, football.
Yeah.
I start putting everything away.
Well, folks, we got a lot of stuff that we need to talk about tonight. Diane, you're covering what happened in Moscow, a different perspective.
Very different, yes.
I've got a bridge way too far.
Yeah, you know, Craig, you're dealing with common sense there.
I know, and it's probably not something anybody ought to do, but, you know, I'm doing it. I'll tell you what, I saw a meme about that bridge collapse, you know, crash and collapse today that I thought was pretty good. It said, I wasn't driving the boat that hit the bridge. Why am I paying for the bridge?
Ah, okay. Well, what people don't realize is, you know, Biden kept saying he's going to make Singapore pay for the bridge. But the thing is, our bridges and everything are insured.
What was the boat?
So, yeah, of course.
Yeah,
but the thing is, you know, he's saying I'm making this one pay and that one pay and blah blah blah. The bridge is insured; it's going to get paid no matter who pays for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of nuts, but that's the way it is. Let's start with quick hitters tonight. We got three of them. Let's start with Hunter Biden's day in court. It did not go well for Hunter Biden. Not even close.
No. What happened was a U.S. district judge out of California, of all places, his name is Mark Scarcy. He's from Los Angeles. He actually rejected Hunter's request to dismiss the charges against him. And that had to do with the four-year scheme to avoid paying $1.4 million in taxes. But what's amazing is that Hunter and his lawyers go in and said he had previous immunity. But the immunity that he was granted was under a previous deal, which completely fell apart. So the deal gone, poof. But Hunter's supposed to be able to keep this immunity, maybe in his world, but not in the real world.
No. And I mean, there's what, nine different charges. And they were trying to get eight of them, I think, thrown out. And the judge said, no, they all stand. You know, I mean, you look at the situation and the judge, Scarcy, he literally said, you don't have any immunity. Your deal was never complete. It was never signed off on. You know, you're barking up the wrong tree. Hunter Biden and his attorneys, they're trying to say, well, this is a political prosecution. No, it's not.
No, it's not. No, it's not. It's a legitimate prosecution.
That judge also said, when they brought that up, he said, this doesn't have any hallmarks of a political prosecution whatsoever. There is no evidence of bias. And you can't just allege it and have it be so. You have to have proof of it, and they don't have any proof.
Right. No, nothing at all. What this is, it proves that Hunter Biden really, besides being a criminal, you know, maybe not technically yet because he hasn't been convicted, but what Hunter Biden really is a grifter and a scam artist.
Yeah. I mean, he made over, what, $7.5 million during that time frame and apparently didn't pay any taxes on it at all. And some of the stuff that he was claiming as deductions were things like luxury rental homes and luxury car rentals and hookers.
Yeah, he loves them hookers.
You know, he was at the White House over the weekend for the big, you know, Transgender Day of Visibility. I'm wondering if the Secret Service, after, you know, the festivities there at the White House, went around checking for little packages of booger sugar.
Oh, God. Yeah. Now, this whole incident going on with Hunter is really a joke. Because here it is, he's had deals with Ukraine, he's had deals with China, he tries to withhold his taxes, he was in, I guess, illegal possession of a firearm at one point, but, you know, it's all well and fine. We're supposed to ignore all that.
Yeah, because his name is Biden.
Because his name is Biden. Well, guess what? You know, Uncle Joe might get away with a bunch of stuff, but hopefully his ne'er-do-well son won't.
Well, you know, I wonder how his painting career will go in jail.
Oh, God. Have you seen some of his so-called paintings?
It's nothing I would ever want. Not only because it's done by Hunter Biden, but because it's just a bunch of snot blown on a canvas. I mean, they're ugly.
Yeah, well, as someone who graduated from one of the top art schools in the country, Parsons School of Design, who has a dual major from it, as a painter, as a designer, I can tell you his artwork sucks. It's a joke.
You know, I used to go into art galleries. We had a nice art gallery at the university I went to. And you can go in there, and some of the stuff they would have on display in there, I wouldn't give you two nickels for it. And that's what Hunter Biden's stuff looks like to me.
Well, you know what? A lot of the money that he garnered from his so-called artwork, a lot of it was money from donors to his father's campaigns.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like influence buying.
Again. I mean, you know, it's just like the influence peddling that he was engaged in for all those years with China and Russia and Ukraine and Mexico, and, you know, the list goes on and on. It's really no different. I mean, one major donor bought the majority of his quote-unquote artwork for huge sums of money, and right. that was just a shell deal for Joe.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's all that was.
Absolutely a joke. His son is a joke. He's a joke, Joe Biden himself. And I mean, the sooner we can get this family out of the White House, the better this country will be.
No kidding. Next, this one's kind of interesting on a lot of different levels. RFK Jr. was in an interview a day or two ago, and he was asked about, you know, Trump and you know, Trump's threat to democracy. And Diane, he said something very interesting about that.
Yeah. He said, and I'm going to quote him here, folks, "I can make the argument that President Biden is much worse," and this is related to Biden's claim that Trump is a threat to democracy. "And the reason for that is President Biden is the first candidate in history, the first president in history, that has used the federal agencies to censor political speech or censor his opponent." Now, that is true in a way. But you also got to remember back to 2016 and how the FBI and Hillary's little group try to censor President Trump.
Well, not only censor him, but they together hooked up the whole Russian disinformation thing. They paid for, you know, Hillary, and a lot of people forget this, the FBI contributed money to it as well, that fake dossier.
Yes.
Okay, the Steele dossier. And the FBI was spying on the Trump campaign, and then later on President Trump.
Exactly. Well, there's a part two to what he said, and this really hits home. "The greatest threat to democracy is not someone who questions election returns, but a president of the United States who will use the power of his office to force social media companies, as in Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, to open a portal and give access to that portal to the FBI, CIA, the IRS, the NIH, to censor political critics." And he is 100% correct.
Yeah, I mean, it galls me to say that he's right about anything, but on that, he is.
Well, it doesn't gall me to say he's right about just that. RFK Jr., yeah, he's a loon with climate change and green energy and all of that, but he did have quite a few, or he does have quite a few very good stances. The COVID vaccine, people need to be held responsible, primarily Fauci. He's not a total loon. However, he's a terrible disappointment with his VP pick.
Well, that woman is absolutely nuts.
Total, complete, far left, progressive loon of the first degree.
Well,
he really screwed up with that one.
Well, I don't know that he screwed up with that one. Okay. I would like to think it was a mistake, but I guarantee you it wasn't. That shows his true colors. When he picks somebody like that to be his running mate, that shows you where he actually stands on most of the issues. You know, you can't take what he says at face value. When somebody like that, who portrays themselves as a moderate, picks a lunatic from the left fringe to be their running mate, that shows you his actual mindset.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I have a little bit of a warning for some of the Never Trumpers out there who said that, and they still say they're going to vote for RFK, even with this loon on the ticket. And you claim you call yourselves conservatives. This woman is 100% pro-abortion at any stage, number one. And that goes against a main conservative belief. She wants amnesty, from what I understand. This, she's 38 years old. She's a billionaire. So you know there's monies involved here. She's the ex-wife of one of the, I want to say Bezos, but I'm not sure.
No, she's not. She's not Bezos. She's somehow connected to Google. I think she had an ex that was big in Google.
Oh yeah, yeah. The one of the co-founders of Google. Yeah. That's it. Right.
You know, I mean, she's a left-wing lunatic, and you know, you don't wish ill on anyone. Okay.
No, and the Never Trump. Really need to think twice about that. I understand where you're coming from. Believe me, I do. But when you put someone like that on the ticket, you're going against your conservative values, which should be more important than one person alone.
Right. You know, what I was going to say is you don't wish anybody harm. Okay, but that lunatic, should RFK Jr. be elected, that lunatic is one heartbeat away from the presidency, and there is such a thing as the Kennedy curse.
Yes, absolutely. Although he's not, he's kind of an outcast in the Kennedy clan, it seems.
Yeah, but I don't think that really matters when it comes to the curse. I mean, you know, and you can believe in curses. You may not believe in curses, but, you know, there. I mean, the Kennedy family has had a real run of horrible luck, you know, when it comes to things like that. And, you know, there's always abject nutcases out there trying to make a name for themselves, trying to become infamous.
Yeah, 15 minutes of fame.
Yeah, you just don't want somebody like her being a heartbeat away from the presidency. God forbid.
No. And to be in all honesty, I don't care who the person is, but 38 years old is too young to be president. I know technically and constitutionally they can be. But in today's world, 38 is too young.
There's
I think
no...
you should be at least in your 40s.
There's a lack of real world experience, you know, and that's something you got to look at too. You're right. I mean, these Never Trumpers that are saying, well, we're going to vote for RFK Jr. You folks need to take a long, hard look at that, because you're setting this country up for huge failure. Huge.
Well, the one thing I do want to remind people of, yes, it would be, you know, to the country's advantage if Donald Trump became president over Biden. Problem is, and I've written about this and I'm going to say it again, if we don't keep the House and retake the Senate, President Trump will be an impotent president.
Very true.
Politically impotent.
Yeah.
And that's something that must be kept in mind. When you're deciding who you're going to vote for, remember the down ticket.
Yep. You got to go Republican from top to bottom. And it's just that simple. All right. So let's talk about what happened over in Teaneck, New Jersey. I would like to say I'm shocked by it, but I'm really not. There was a group in Teaneck that was connected to a synagogue, and they were having a gathering, and literally hundreds, if not over 1,000, pro-Hamas protesters showed up to cause trouble.
Yeah. This is reminiscent of both the pogroms in Russia, the turn of the century, and the gathering of Jews into certain areas during World War II. And these people, it's in their minds to hurt Jews. That's what they want to do. They are sticking up for terrorists. They don't care. These are Americans, people. You have to remember that. These groups that are doing these things, yeah, there's some foreigners mixed in with them, but for the most part, they're Americans. We in this country are not supposed to have that mindset.
No, and you yet, would hope that we had done away with that long, long, long ago.
Right. Right. I mean, but it was very interesting that one of the people that was protesting on the side of Israel, pro-Israel, said that what's going on with these kind of protesters and the breaking into Jewish-owned businesses and stuff, which is reminiscent of Kristallnacht, he said it only makes me want Israel to pummel Gaza further, and they are. Victory against Hamas will happen. They're trapped and have nowhere to go. Even Egypt doesn't want these people in their country, nor does any neighboring Arab nation, because the Palestinians export only two things, terrorism and political instability. Gee, he must have read one of my articles on that.
Yeah, one either one of us, really.
Yeah, right. But people need to realize, yeah, this is happening here in our country, and it will be put to a stop. But the bottom line is, this kind of sentiment is true. There's a reason the Arab people don't want their own people. They bring trouble and instability wherever they go. We don't need these people here. We don't need their supporters here. If these people in this country are so bleeding heart for the Palestinians, why don't they go in aid organizations and help them?
Well, there's no fun in that. I mean, right. these aren't humanitarians by any stretch of the imagination.
No, they're not.
I mean, they don't look at the world that way. They look at the world as, you know, what can they do that's anti-Jewish? What can they do to hurt Jewish people, to hurt Jewish-owned businesses? That's the way they look at the world. Now, I said that I would like to think this was shocking and kind of an aberration, but it's not. You got to understand, folks, Teaneck, New Jersey is a very blue area in a very blue state.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the you know, chant from the liberals from the blue side of the aisle is decidedly anti-Jewish and pro-Hamas.
Right.
My question is, and I did not see any of the footage from the protests, but Diane, I think you did.
Yeah.
Were these mostly young people? Were these mostly college-age people that were there in the pro-Hamas side trying to cause trouble?
There was quite a few of them. Absolutely quite a few of them. There were some older people. But for the most part, yes, the ones on the Palestinian side were on the younger side. A lot of them had their faces covered, cowards that they are.
Cowards.
You know, they like to spout off things, but, you know, you're not supposed to know who we are. They're cowards, basically. But what's more terrifying about this type of thing is nothing is being done to stop it.
Well, yeah, that's what I was just thinking. You know, these things break out, and they have broken out on a lot of college campuses. And, you know, you see this kind of stuff on the street in places like Michigan and you know, places like that. But what's being done to put an end to it? These people are not being arrested. You know, if the shoe was somehow on the other foot, they would be calling these things hate crimes and acts of violence. But because they're pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas, and their actions are against Jews, against Jewish businesses, synagogues, Jewish people, you know, garden variety Jewish people on the street, they don't classify this. Nobody is classifying these as hate crimes or incitement to violence.
Yeah, well, what one reporter equated this to is that the pro-Hamas lunatics mobilize and gather to commit these acts of terror in Teaneck, and it reeks up the Klan and their night-riding campaigns. Remember those, folks? This is the same thing. Substitute blacks with Jews. And this is what you have. And yet nothing is being done to stop it.
You go back and you look at that situation historically. It was the Democrats that created the Klan. It was the Democrats that perpetrated the Klan. It was the Democrats that came up with Jim Crow laws. Okay. Mm-hmm. So the Klan traditionally has been always been against both black people and Jewish people.
Absolutely.
You know, and this is just the Klan instead of with white hoods with black masks.
Right.
I mean, that's really what it comes down to.
These people are just people that are fueled with hate. They have nothing but hate comprising their being.
And
you
wonder,
know what? When they're done hating the Jews, what are they going to come for the Christians next?
Come for whoever's available.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I wonder how many of the people involved in that situation in Teaneck, New Jersey actually have any idea what Israel is all about. I don't know that they have anything personally against the Jewish people. Not that they know. They're just indoctrinated into the hate.
Yeah.
They don't know any different.
Remember, there's an old saying, you know, a baby is born as a black slate. A baby born doesn't know what hate is, doesn't know what love is, doesn't know what anything is. It's basically a blank slate. It learns to love, and it also learns to hate. This indoctrination cannot just be coming from the schools, Craig. It has to be in their homes as well.
It does. I mean, these people have grown up with this. They are diehard liberals. They don't know any different. They've got a mob mentality, and that's a dangerous thing, too. Okay, so you put all this together, and you can see where this is heading. And it's not, you know, the outcome of it isn't going to be good.
No.
You look at the situation from a distance, and it's ugly. If you get closer to it, the closer you get, the uglier it becomes.
Absolutely. Well, I hope that when we get a change in the administration and people start getting deported, I just hope they round up a couple of these people and deport them with the others.
Well, I hope so.
Some of them who are starting these things are not necessarily American citizens.
That's very true.
Mm-hmm.
That's very true. But right now, with the DOJ that we have and these liberal judges and liberal DAs in different states, if you're doing something that falls in line with the liberal agenda, you're not going to be arrested. You're not going to be jailed. You're not going to go on trial. Nothing is going to happen to you.
Especially if you fall into certain groups of people.
That's very true.
And of color. They're going to look the other way. And it's a sorry state that we are now facing. And it's going to get worse, guys. If Biden is back in the White House, it's going to get a lot worse, because it's not Biden running the show. It's Obama.
All I'm going to say, and then we're going to have to go to break, is that the longer this is allowed to continue, the longer these types of, I call it a riot, is allowed to go on without repercussions, the more emboldened the people will become that are perpetrating these kinds of acts.
True.
Okay, sure. We've hit the bottom of the hour. That means we got to take a quick break, get in a couple of station IDs. 30 minutes from now, I'm talking about a bridge way too far. But when we come back from this break, Diane has it with what happened in Moscow, a different perspective. Stay with us. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Hi guys, Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out The National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on rspradio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor, getting you through the Tuesday night show. And if you miss any part of it, go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button, and listen to your heart's content.
Yes.
All right. So very recently, there was a situation that came up in Moscow that garnered a lot of news real quick. And it seems to have kind of faded from the news just as quickly. Now, I suspect that part of that is because they are having trouble perpetuating the misinformation that was put out by Moscow. And I think Diane kind of agrees with that, because this week she put out her op-ed, What Happened in Moscow, A Different Perspective.
Okay, and I'm going to start with this quote. The embassy is monitoring reports that extremists have imminent plans to target large gatherings, including in Moscow, to include concerts. And U.S. citizens should be advised to avoid large gatherings over the next 48 hours, end quote. That was the U.S. Embassy public advisory alert sent out this past March 7th, warning American citizens in Russia to, quote, avoid large gatherings due to intel regarding imminent plans for an attack by, quote, extremists. This alert was also sent to Russian authorities as per our duty to warn policy, even though Russia already had intel of its own to that effect. And so the twists and turns in the deadliest terrorist attack in Russia in over 20 years is, as expected, channeling the usual heading known as the blame game, with Putin first claiming ISIS terrorists were the perpetrators of the attack, then switching his story to blame Ukraine instead. And not surprisingly, with Putin's main concern always being to hold on to his iron grip on power, he's now even lobbing accusations against we who try to warn him of what was expected to come, which sadly it did. So while our intelligence is, at least for now, going with Putin's ISIS storyline, Putin continues to state that he's putting additional countywide, countrywide, too little, too late security measures in place. And this comes after his having issued a statement that the four perpetrators of the concert attack have been found and are being detained in the Basmeni District Court, where they face a maximum sentence of life in prison. And isn't it odd that they're not facing a death sentence? But then again, this comes from the man who then tried to switch the narrative by saying that, quote, they tried to hide and move towards Ukraine, where, according to preliminary data, a window was prepared for them from the Ukrainian side to cross the state border. No, Vladimir, I don't think so. And while Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, has rightfully denied both his and Ukraine's involvement in the concert attack, what I believe was a well-planned internal massacre masquerading as a terrorist attack, now sees upwards of 140 people having been killed and countless others wounded, the blame in Russian intelligence's eyes, at least for public consumption, remains with the Islamic State Khorasan, or ISIS-K, as it's more commonly known. So why this focus? Because the Federal Security Service of Russia remains, as per Putin, working to identify what they call the entirety of this terrorist group's support base. Simply, Craig, why would Putin keep the focus there if he really wants people to believe that Ukraine or even the U.S. was involved? In my opinion, Putin would not, unless the murder of innocents was all pre-planned to either divert and deflect the truth away from him via a cover-up so vile that it could change the entirety of not only the Russia-Ukraine war, but of his regime and Mother Russia herself.
You know, ISIS-K is one of those groups that we've heard of in this country, but we haven't heard a lot about them for a couple of years. If people only go back a couple of years, they're going to realize where the name ISIS-K popped up in media reports. Why don't you fill us in on that?
Okay. Before I get into the specifics regarding Vladimir Putin, know that ISIS-K is the very same terrorist group that murdered 13 American service members at Abbey Gate in Kabul during the Biden-initiated 2021 U.S. military pullout from Afghanistan. You know the pullout I speak of, where Biden not only left a number of Americans behind, but also some of our allies, our Afghan helpers and their families, as well as millions of dollars of key U.S. military equipment behind as well. Equipment now in the hands of the Taliban. Equipment now being used against the Afghan people themselves and others when need be. So why would ISIS-K now suddenly choose to cause havoc in Russia, knowing that her leader is more aligned with known terrorist countries, think Iran, North Korea, etc., than he, meaning Putin, is with the West? Simply, I do not believe that ISIS-K was the perpetrator of the Moscow concert attack, especially when their stated enemies are the Taliban and the West. But, and while what I just stated regarding ISIS-K is still something to keep in the back of one's mind, as terrorists at times need no reason to do what they do. So too is the fact that Putin himself knew in advance of a possible imminent attack, yet he willingly chose not to add additional security, but to pull security away from the Crocus City Hall, one of Russia's largest suburban concert halls, a concert hall belonging to a group of companies owned by the Aberjani Russian construction tycoon and billionaire oligarch Aris Agalalov, who happens to own a home and property here in South Florida and is a friend with Donald Trump, thus leaving the venue with but minimum security at best. And if that name sounds familiar, it's because back in 2016, Agalarov allegedly offered Trump teams supposedly damaging information from the Kremlin about Hillary Clinton, which led Trump Jr. to hold a meeting at their Manhattan offices, which in turn was the beginning of the Trump witch hunt. An interesting side note, if nothing else. And so the scheduled performers that night of the attack were the Russian, what's called heritage rock group, Picnic in Western vernacular, a group inspired by Western progressive rock bands, but with a classic Russian twist, and who for this concert were to be accompanied by a symphony orchestra. And Picnic was set to play the first of two sold-out concerts when four gunmen in combat gear first opened fire by shooting concert attendees at point-blank range, while at the same time setting off numerous smoke bombs. Now, Craig, here is where it gets not only a bit interesting, but possibly why I believe this particular concert was targeted, and it falls in line with why I also believe that Vladimir Putin had, if not a direct hand in the attack itself, he at least had a hand in covering up the attack's truth.
Well, when you look at the band Picnic, there's some things that kind of stand out a little bit. Picnic is very well known in Russia. They're kind of the, and they've been around for a while. This isn't some, you know, right, band of young kids or young adults. You know, these guys have been around for a while.
Since the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and there are things that stand out about them, especially their lead singer and guitarist, right?
Yes. So here's some background on the band Picnic. The band's lead vocalist and guitar frontman, Edmund Shikarsky, is of the Catholic faith, as opposed to the predominant and Putin-favored Russian Orthodox faith, and is not a current booster, as he calls it, of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, even though at first he supported Putin's special operation into Ukraine. Also know that Ukrainian authorities had previously banned Picnic from performing in the country because the group had played a number of concerts in Russian-occupied Crimea, including in Sevastopol, and who later released the song To the Memory of Innocent Victims, a song about those who were politically oppressed under communism. A quite surprising side note for a man who actually received a degree from Leningrad Polytechnic in the construction of nuclear power plants, I'd say. And the reason I bring up Edmund Shikarsky's Catholic faith is twofold. First, recently deceased Alexei Navalny, the opposition leader who vocally condemned Vladimir Putin and who died in an Arctic prison under mysterious circumstances, was for many Russians not only still running posthumously to replace Putin as president, but Navalny was also of the Catholic faith. And second, the Catholic faith is now growing in number amongst young people in Russia. And it's young people who, like young people almost everywhere else, that do make up the bulk of Russia's concert goers. Could the gathering that night of what was thousands of predominantly young people, those most likely to oppose Putin at the ballot box, have been the actual planned target of the attack all along, an attack as payback for Putin's 12% loss in votes, a loss to one who demanded 100% loyalty, a loss happening even in a rigged election? Something to at least think about, as nothing is beyond the realm of the former head of the KGB, the man now calling himself president instead of what he really is, a bona fide, Craig, a bona fide dictator.
Well, Putin, like so many other dictators, I mean, they've got one basic thing in common, and they're basically they're terrorists in suits and ties. Mm-hmm. What is that one thing that binds all dictators together under the same umbrella?
Okay. Simply, dictators need absolute power in order to help perpetrate ongoing fear, which in turn helps keep the masses in line and hence themselves in sole control. And in Putin's Russia, there's no place for freedom itself, nor even for the entertaining of free thoughts, for he is a regime that demands absolute control over one's everyday lives and thoughts. No variations from the accepted norm allowed, ever. And what better way to keep fear ongoing than to allow a pre-planned attack of violence to take place against those most likely to be perceived as a threat to the regime in power? And what better way to mask it than with Putin's pretty words said, words to the effect that, and I quote, those who provided them with transport, planned escape, routes from the crime scene, prepared caches of weapons and ammunition, means it's obvious that we are faced not just with a carefully and cynically planned terrorist attack, but with the organized mass murder of peaceful, defenseless people. The criminals were cold-blooded and purposely going to kill, shoot our citizens at point-blank range, our children. So, Craig said, Vladimir Putin, in his very own words.
Now, I'm guessing, and I'm just guessing here, that you're not buying that at face value, that you look at those words and you see something between the lines that other people haven't seen but probably should be made aware of.
Yes. Now, Vladimir Putin is the very man I believe not only knew that the attack on the concert hall was going to take place and when, he might even have helped in the planning of it, courtesy of not only his deliberately pulling security out of the venue instead of his increasing it, but because his above stated words themselves, in my opinion, give it away. How so? Because how else would Putin have known that the victims were going to be shot dead at point-blank range instead of randomly being fired upon, as is the usual case in mass shootings? How else indeed? Remember, some of the victims were followed into what they thought was the safety of the bathrooms, were picked out and shot dead at point-blank range, while others were simply ignored. Sounds to me like some were selectively targeted to be killed. Simply, why would a man as vile and ruthless as Vladimir Putin stop something whose aftermath would surely see a rise in the Russian people's collective fear, the very thing needed to help keep him in power, while at the same time allowing Putin to place blame on the very enemies he is at war with, as in outwardly Ukraine and in the shadows with the U.S. Why, indeed? Remember, ever since the Iron Curtain went down, there has been an influx of Russian nationals into the U.S., and they are some of the biggest boosters of both capitalism and freedom. And with many still having family in Russia, they are able to tell them the truth about a regime trying to hide the fact that Russia is a dictatorship, where freedom is not allowed, and where the West is continuously lied about. And Craig, Putin knows this to be truth, and truth is what all good dictators fear the most, of being exposed. Expose the truth, and in time, the aforementioned dissatisfied 12% grows to 20%, then 50%, and more, leading to a possible second Russian Revolution. That is, if Putin's own war-weary military doesn't get to him first.
Okay, so at this point, can you kind of wrap this thing up in a neat little nutshell? I mean, it's a messy situation, so maybe a neat nutshell probably isn't the right terminology. But there is a way to wrap this up because the propaganda seems to be falling apart.
Right. So let's look at it this way. While Vladimir Putin continues spewing that ISIS-K and or either Ukraine or the U.S. is to blame for the attack, I think the U.S.-Ukraine scenario can safely be put to rest, for neither have anything to gain from being party to such an attack. Nor do I think that ISIS itself, nor any of its subgroups, had anything to do with this attack, even though ISIS and its offshoots are always the first to take credit for attacks they usually and actually didn't do. After all, publicity is everything, even in terrorist circles. Nor do I think that any Russian splinter groups had anything to do with it either. And why? Because the fact remains that Putin's hold on power is indeed slipping. And what better way to regain what is lost than to create an act so vile that it instills in the masses a fear of things getting even worse if he, a man of war who rules with an iron fist, were to lose power. Just something to think about. And with that, case closed.
You know, it's a very interesting picture that you paint, and I don't think it's inaccurate at all. What Putin did there in Moscow is kind of a twist on, let's call it an age-old tactic, right? He knew that this was coming, that there was an attack coming. Rather than increasing security at the venue, he decreased it, right?
Deliberately decreased it.
Okay.
Yes.
And reading between the lines and what you accurately, I believe, point out in this particular op-ed was that he did that as a way to maintain control, maintain his iron fist control by using this to, and propagandizing it against his enemies, real or perceived, correct?
Right. Yes.
Okay.
It instilled fear. This attack instilled fear that the Russians hadn't had to experience in about 20 years.
Here's the twist on the age-old deal. He did it to maintain power. Mm-hmm. But if you really want to see how this same tactic can be used to lose control rather than gain control, all you have to do is go back to Hillary Clinton in Benghazi when we heard chatter that there was going to be an attack on the U.S. embassy in Benghazi. And instead of increasing security, she decreased it as a way to get us out of Libya to create a vacuum of power that would then be taken over by terrorists.
Well, not only did she decrease the security, remember what security she did install were actually members of terrorist groups.
Right. She took U.S.-based security out and replaced it with the February 17 Brigade.
Right. That's the one. Yeah.
And that brigade was the very terrorist organization that then attacked the consulate. But that was all done to help create a vacuum of power in Libya, with the U.S. out of Libya, with the U.S. embassy shut down, gone, right, there would become an instant vacuum of power. That vacuum of power was then, of course, filled by terrorists. In the case of Vladimir Putin, he allowed this attack to occur because he could propagandize it and turn it to his own benefit by blaming it on his enemies, on Ukraine and on the U.S.
Right.
It's right. It's the same tactic, just with a different flavor.
What he did was he channeled his inner Stalin, just like, you know, Biden channels his inner Obama, or who I like to say Vivek Ramaswamy channels his inner Obama as well. What he did was he took the playbook of one of the most infamous people of all times in Russian history and brought it to a new, more modernized version.
Yeah, I mean,
it's very dangerous.
You know, and again, adding credence to the op-ed, these four people that were arrested were certainly arrested awfully quick.
Too quick.
You know, I mean, when was the last time you ever heard of that?
No.
I mean, it just never goes down that way. Folks, you can get this op-ed by going to two different places. Go to Diane's blog, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, or go to rspradio1.com. It's under the title, What Happened in Moscow? A Different Perspective. What I suggest you do is grab the link, hang on to the link for future reference, because I don't think we've heard the last of this.
Okay. No, I don't think so either. And the response I'm getting on social media is absolutely fantastic. His quote really gives him away in the pulling of the security as well. Only one person said no way. They even said that Putin loves Russia as much as Donald Trump loves the U.S. Well, of course, I had to answer the guy and I said, really? Are you really serious in what you're saying? It turns out he is an American in Russia, married to a Russian.
Well, there's no slant there, right?
No slant. And of course, no, I will not say the name.
What Happened in Moscow, A Different Perspective. Go to Diane's blog. Okay, thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, or go to rspradio1.com. You can get the link either way. Hang on to it for future reference, and then share the link with anybody you can, because this is a classic case of an inside job used for propaganda purposes.
Right.
It's classic. Right.
And that's just my opinion. Do I know this is fact? No, of course not. But I also know that 2 + 2 in my universe still equals 4.
Yeah,
and
well,
when you put the pieces together, you get a complete puzzle piece, picture, I should say.
And that's what you and I always do. We step back and look at the bigger picture, you know, and it's easy to take things, you know, well, you know, the media says it's ISIS-K and everybody runs with that. You know, but, you know, the media always projects that Donald Trump is the one that's in league with Vladimir Putin, you know, right, and does everything to protect him. But when you look at this situation, there's just too many red flags that say it can't possibly be what Putin said it was.
No, it couldn't be. It definitely was not Ukraine. And definitely, we had nothing to do with this.
Ukraine's got their hands
saying,
full.
Oh, it's Biden's fault. No, Biden isn't smart enough to pull off anything like this.
No, and what would be the purpose of it? Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, and you know, what would be the purpose of the U.S. trying to pull this off? What would be
we would ever do.
No. But what would be the purpose of it if we actually were involved? There is no purpose to it. Furthermore, what is the purpose for ISIS-K to do this?
None.
What did they hope to achieve? It's absolute zero.
Zero, 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 because ISIS-K over and over publicly states that their enemy is the Taliban, because they feel the Taliban isn't doing enough terrorism, basically. and the West. Putin is not the West. He aligns himself with the likes of Iran, North Korea, Syria, you know, all the nasties out there. He's not the West. So why would ISIS-K attack a country whose leader basically aligns with them?
Yeah, it just makes no sense.
No, it doesn't.
It makes no sense. All right, so we've hit the top of the hour. That means we got to take another quick break, get in a couple of station IDs. One more segment to go, and when we come back, I'm going to be talking about a bridge way too far. Stay with us. There's more Right Side Patriots after this.
Hi, guys. Diane Sorey from The Patriot Factor on thepatriotfactor.blogspot.com, where I found a home base 7 years ago after becoming one of Facebook's longtime Facebook felons, or so I've been told by the Facebook gods. On my blog, you will find not only my articles, but our Right Side Patriots investigative reports, as well as stories and links to and from well-known writers and bloggers, plus what I call almost daily memes, my snarky take on news of the day. And for more great takes on the issues of the day, check out the National Patriot at thenationalpatriot.com, where you can read Craig's insight into all the current news happenings. And join us both on Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. EST at rspradio1.com.
You're listening to Right Side Patriots Radio, the best in conservative commentary, news, and talk, where we do away with the politically correct nonsense and give you the politically direct truth. This is the home of Right Side Patriots every Tuesday and Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern with Craig Andreessen and Diane Sorey. We're working to make this country great again from the right and leaving puddles of melted snowflakes on the left. Thanks for listening to Right Side Patriots, your best bet on the internet.
You're listening to RSPRadio1.com.
Welcome back to Right Side Patriots on RSPRadio1.com. Craig Andreessen at the National Patriot, Diane Sorey at the Patriot Factor, getting you through the Tuesday night edition of the show. And again, if you miss any part of it, go to rspradio1.com tomorrow morning, click the podcast button, and go to it.
Yes.
All right. So you took on the whole inside scoop on what is very possibly going on in Moscow. I took on this week a topic trying to knock down some of the conspiracy theory rumors that have been surrounding the MV Dolly colliding with the Francis Scott Key Bridge.
Right.
Now, I did this under a commentary entitled, A Bridge Way Too Far. And I suppose somebody on the right side of the political aisle needs to be the voice of reason regarding the Francis Scott Key Bridge disaster, and since I've been seeing so many bone-crushingly stupid social media posts about it, I'm happy to step in. Before I delve into some of this nonsense, allow me to just say how pleased I am that so many people who've been held as political prisoners in empty Walmarts since the Obama regime are now able to gain internet access. It's truly heartwarming. Okay, one of the things I've seen posted over the past week, time and time again, and usually accompanied by the video, is that the bridge was intentionally detonated as per sparks seen coming from the top of the superstructure as the bridge was collapsing. Are you kidding me? That bridge had lights on it, along the top and along the sides, and you have to run the electricity somewhere. Common sense would hopefully lead some to understand that the power for those lights is being run where the freaking lights are. As the bridge collapsed, those lines would naturally stretch and would quickly reach the snapping point, which they did. As the power lines snap, especially if they come into contact with metal, they will and did send out showers of sparks. Besides, it doesn't take a demolition expert, Diane, to realize that during a planned controlled demolition of a bridge, the explosives do not go off after the bridge superstructure breaks apart.
Well, that's very, very true. These people that put up these kind of posts, they look for conspiracies in everything. And while, you know, many conspiracies do turn out to be truth, this bridge case is not one of them.
No, I agree. Here's the second one, and I've seen far too many harebrained posts regarding this one. Tugboats. And far too many people insisting that there are always tugs to prevent just such a thing from happening. It took me almost 5 minutes of research to find out that in Baltimore Harbor, while there are tugboats available, they are not required for anything beyond helping a ship maneuver away from the dock. Now, they can be summoned upon request. So the question is, were tugs summoned in this case? According to the NTSB, yes. But it takes a tug some time to get from point A to point B. And while we don't know exactly where point A was in this case, we do know that point B was not close to point A. In their initial playback of the ship's recordings, the NTSB said clearly that the harbor pilots did indeed request a tug when they first lost power, as is standard protocol. Next up is the speed of the ship. Now, we've been told, and it has been verified, that that ship was moving at 8.7 knots when it lost power. That's roughly 10 miles per hour. For all those now claiming and posting that the MV Dolly was at full steam when it struck the Francis Scott Key Bridge, you need to know that the MV Dolly had a top speed at full steam of 22 knots. Now, for those who don't know, 22 knots is roughly 25 to 25.5 miles per hour, a far cry from 8 knots or 10 miles per hour. The point is, the MV Dolly was not at full steam when it struck the bridge, so quit saying that it was. Now, that brings me to this. A good many people claim and have posted that the Dolly had more than enough room to stop before hitting the bridge. Diane, the problem with those claims is that those making such claims have no knowledge of or appreciation for inertia. Inertia is defined as a property of matter by which it continues in its existing state of rest or uniform motion in a straight line unless that state is changed by an external force. Inertia of a body can be measured by its mass, which governs its resistance to the action of a force, and the mass of the MV Dolly, when fully loaded, is nearly 116,000 tons. As masses go, that's massive.
Well, that's extremely massive. And when you have something of that size moving at that pace, which you think is really slow, but it's not quite as slow, you know, when you take it into account that you're moving an 1,000-foot-long barge, there are other things that come into play. It's simply the fact of, can you really stop something moving that big moving at that speed?
Well, I mean, inertia is what it is. And if you don't believe me about inertia, I might suggest you look it up, but not on Google, because I'm sure some of your empty Walmart dwellers are absolutely sure that Google is in on the whole thing. Look, to be fair, the dolly lost power. I don't know how long or what distance is required to stop, but I can tell you that at 116,000 tons and at 8 knots, the inertia is not going to allow that ship to stop on a dime. Now, that brings me to the myriad of posts regarding dropping anchor. While dropping anchor is a good way to attempt to stop a moving ship, it's not that simple. First, one has to determine how deep the water is where you want to drop the anchor. Then, you have to calculate the correct amount of anchor scope, a 7-to-1 ratio is recommended. And once those things are done, drop away and good luck. But understand, it still won't stop something that weighs 116,000 tons moving at 8 knots on a dime. According to the NTSB, harbor masters told the harbor pilots on the dolly to drop the port anchor. Standard protocol, again, for a ship adrift in the harbor. And photos of the now wrecked ship show that, indeed, the port anchor had been dropped. Now, for those who spent the last decade in an empty Walmart, the port anchor is the one on the left side of the ship. Then you get this in social media posts, but they steered the boat straight into the bridge support. Well, that's yet another thing I've seen posted all over social media, so let me try and clear that up for you folks. Ships don't steer like cars. Your car steers from the front, while ships steer from the rear, more accurately from the stern, not from the bow. As the dolly was coming from wherever it was docked, it was making a turn to starboard when it lost power. A ship's rudder, that's the steery thingy, is controlled by electronics and hydraulics. When the power is lost, so too are the electronics which control the hydraulics. Diane, hopefully you've never been in a situation where, while driving your car, the engine shuts off, but if you have, you might notice that it suddenly becomes very hard to turn your wheel, your car's steery thingy, to easily move your 2-ton vehicle out of the road. Imagine trying to do that if the vehicle you're driving weighs 116,000 tons.
Yeah, I would think so. But, you know, these folks, they take things, whatever the media says, they take it as truth. What they need to do is look closely at the videos to understand the logistics involved in trying to first stop a ship of this size from hitting, and also then maybe they'll understand that also playing a part in this is the underwater currents. That's something that everybody has kind of left out.
Well, yeah, and
A ship that doesn't have power can't fight the currents.
That's very true. Now, yes. I posted the video. I connected it in, you know, embedded it into my blog so you can see what I'm talking about here. And I encourage you to watch that video. You can clearly see the stern of the dolly sliding to the camera's right, which tells me one of two things. Either the rudder was hard to starboard, starboard being turned to the ship's right until the lights came back on. And in those few brief seconds before they went out again, the ship straightened out, or the pilots tried to reverse engines in a maneuver called backing down, which on a single prop ship, the dolly being a single prop ship, the prop being the spinny thing at the back for you Walmartians that makes a ship go, causes the stern of the ship to slide. You can clearly see that happening when you watch the video. Then because of inertia, remember inertia, and the shortened distance between the bow and the bridge support, stopping the dolly was no longer an option. But if you watch the light at the center of the dolly, you can see very clearly just a second or two before impact, it moves to the camera's right. That tells me that the pilot was engaged in a last-second desperate attempt to minimize the impact. Now, what about the backup generators? All these ships have backup generators. Yep, that's true. but the backup generators are set to engage automatically 45 seconds after a ship loses power. And in this case, it looks as though it took nearly a full minute, at least in the part of the video that we can see. Now, that means that at 10 miles per hour, that ship had no power and no steering for at least 880 feet that we know of. And when the main generator kicked back in, it still took another 10 seconds or roughly 146.667 more feet before they could restart the engine, and steering was restored for a total of 1,026.667 feet of forward momentum without any steering. Here's another thing that I've seen way too much of, and that's that the ship's navigation system was hacked. No, it wasn't. And just a bit of research was needed to dispel that bit of nonsense. Diane, the MV Dolly's engines and controls were connected to SCADA, S-C-A-D-A. That stands for Supervisory Control and Data Acquisition. As are most cargo vessels, and SCADA is not connected to the internet. In fact, should anybody on board or elsewhere attempt to connect SCADA systems to the internet, the entire system shuts down.
Well, what's very interesting about that, by what you just said, which is cause and effect, there's one very simple effect that everyone who was involved in the conspiracy nonsense avoided.
Well, yeah, even if the Dolly SCADA system was somehow taken over by malware, the lack of internet connectivity would make it impossible for any hacker to steer it into a bridge. Mm-hmm. All righty. That brings me to all the crap I've seen on social media regarding the whole thing being a red flag or a black swan event. Or maybe that was a red swan and a black flag, or a black swan waving a red flag, whatever. Anyway, who in the hell during a flag-waving swan event would call in a mayday, request tugs, and at least try to drop anchor? Nobody. And the two harbor pilots on board the Dolly did all. Now, let me address quite possibly the most inane knot-headed posts I've seen over the past week related to the collision with and collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Here's the post. Quote, question. Who was casually filming the bridge for no reason? Why so many videos? Unquote. Oh, good Lord. Haven't some of you dipsticks ever heard of security or traffic cameras? They're everywhere. And before you post anything else and go to the kitchen for another cup of coffee, put your damn pants back on. Your toaster is taking pictures of you and sending them to China. Not everything is some wild conspiracy, and not everything you are told is an attempt to cover up. This has all, and I mean all, the hallmarks of a catastrophic yet somewhat preventable accident. And it's going to take a long time to rebuild that bridge before Joe Biden can ride the train over it again. Now, to be clear, I'm not sure what train Joe was referring to, as there have never been any tracks on that bridge, but I'm pretty sure his train of thought derailed long ago. And finally, I know life is hard, even with the internet, when you're held captive in an empty Walmart, but the overcrowding is about to be taken care of. It was announced a couple of weeks ago that soon, very soon, there will be 1,000 empty Family Dollar stores all around the country. So do yourselves a favor, you conspiracy theorists, and before you post any more of that crap, request a transfer.
Yeah, you know, this boils down to a terribly unfortunate accident. This was not done on purpose. There was no ulterior motive behind anything. This was a plain and simple accident. And these pilots tried their best to cause as little damage as possible. Unfortunately, that was the main support, and the bridge went down.
You know, this bridge was, I don't want to say it was unique in its design. I mean, there's a lot of bridges designed this way, but this is a very long bridge, and there's a very long gap between those two major supports, right? One of the things about this bridge is it had no vertical cabling like you would see maybe on the Golden Gate Bridge or other bridges, you know, where you see the cables running up and down.
It's a different type of bridge.
Right. This was engineered as a span bridge without the cabling. That means if one of those supports goes, the whole bridge is going to go. Because it's not designed to hold up without those supports.
No. If this had been a smaller ship and it hit that main piling, that main support, there might have been damage, but probably the whole bridge would not have gone down. But this thing was humongous, this ship. It was 1,000 feet long, guys. I don't think people realize how big this was.
I mean, this is a big, heavy ship. And, you know, moving at roughly 10 miles an hour, like you said, Diane, you don't think that's very fast, but it is when you've got that kind of inertia, when you've got that kind of mass that is moving. You can't stop that on a dime. You know, a perfect example is cut off a semi and see how fast that stops.
Right.
You know, I mean, you don't stop a ship, you know, without a lot of effort.
Right.
And, you know, when you lose power and you lose rudder control and you're literally drifting, there's nothing you can do. And then if you start the engines back up and go to full reverse, the move called backing out, You cause the ship to torque and the back end slides and it'll go further across than what you want it to. That means now you're not even aimed the way you were hoping to be. And you really haven't slowed anything down. You drop an anchor, and unless the anchor has something to dig into or grab onto, you're actually going to drag the anchor. And if you drop it with too much lead, then you're not going to stop. You're just going to keep going. And that is apparently what happened in this case. You look at the video closely, and for those, you know, say, well, they dynamited the bridge. Well, those flashes, those, you know, showers of sparks are coming from the top of the bridge. That's not where you do a planned demolition of a bridge.
Oh, yeah. No, not at all.
And those sparks don't come until the superstructure is already falling. That tells me that the electric lines snapped. That's all that is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just have to look at it, at those videos, objectively, and not try and shoehorn it into your own personal conspiracy theory. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. You can clearly see at the last second the ship tries to move to the camera's right. You know, I mean, and you know, let's talk about some newer bridges. A lot of them that are built in shipping bays like this now have external structures around the bridge supports, and a good fair distance away from the bridge supports. When I say a fair distance, I mean maybe 50 to 100 feet, and they're circular, and what they're meant for is if a ship loses control, it's going to hit that and not the support.
Right, right.
This one was built in 1977, and they didn't build those supports or those barriers, you know, for this. And, you know, if you look at Baltimore Harbor, the lane for shipping in and out of it is fairly narrow. More narrow than a lot of harbors are. And
yeah,
so
it is pretty narrow.
You know, I mean, it looks like it's massively wide, but in shipping terms, it's not really that wide because the deep part of it where you can get ships in and out is fairly narrow. What you can't see underwater is fairly narrow. Once a ship gets out of control in that narrow of a space, you're courting disaster, and that's why the harbor pilots on board the dolly sent out the SOS. They radioed out a mayday because all of a sudden they lost power. They didn't have any steering, and they knew they were in trouble.
And that helped save lives as well. Yes, six people did unfortunately die, but it could have been a lot worse.
Well, if you watch the video, you can see cars and a couple of big rigs going back and forth across the bridge in the minute or so right before the accident occurred. That SOS gave police on both sides of the bridge, gave authorities on both sides of the bridge, literally 90 seconds before the collision to cut off traffic, and they did it.
Right. One thing people need to notice when you look at the video, at the time of impact, there were no cars on that big span, and that was thanks to those pilots.
The only vehicles that were on the span were the construction workers that were out there working, and they couldn't get back to their vehicle and get it off the bridge in time.
Right.
But nobody was crossing.
And those are the ones, unfortunately, that were lost.
Yeah, nobody was crossing the bridge when the collision occurred. And that's remarkable. That's a remarkable feat by the police and by the harbor pilots and everybody involved.
Yes, it is.
You know, that's great work on their part. You know, this was an accident, unfortunate accident, and it's going to take a long time to rebuild this. But I guarantee you one thing, when this bridge is rebuilt, it will no longer be the Francis Scott Key Bridge.
No, they said they're going to keep it the same name.
You wait. You just wait and see.
If they change it, they're really doing bad things.
Well, Diane, consider where it is. Okay. Baltimore.
Well, that's true.
Right? Deep blue. That's about as deep blue as you can get. And Francis Scott Key not only wrote the national anthem that the liberals hate, but he was also a slaveholder.
Yeah.
I guarantee you they're going to change the name of the bridge.
The original reports did say they're keeping the name, but like you said, who knows?
Just wait.
Land.
It's going to be years before that thing gets rebuilt. This isn't Florida. Okay.
No, and it's very funny. The first person to offer help to the people in Baltimore who are going to be working on this was Ron DeSantis. Remember, after Hurricane Ian hit Florida and destroyed so much on the West Coast, he got the main bridge linking the mainland to the out islands built in less than 2 weeks.
Yeah, but that was a lot smaller bridge, a lot shorter bridge than this.
A lot smaller bridge, but the logistics of what has to be done and how it has to be done is the same, no matter the size.
Yeah, it's just going to take longer. And if they decide to build the barricades around there, which they should, you know, that's going to take a little extra time. The piling that got hit, that's going to have to be replaced. And that's, you know, a relatively deep water exercise to do that. They're going to have to jump through hoops, you know, with regulations and all of that. And, you know, where I say in the op-ed that this was an accident, but maybe a preventable accident, one of the things that I guarantee you is going to come about as a result of this, once they get shipping reopened, they will be required to have tugs follow them all the way out.
That should have been in place all along in the other major harbors in this country. That is standard procedure. Yeah. I'm really surprised that it wasn't in Baltimore.
You know, in this case, all they had to use the tugs for, all they were required to use tugs for was getting in and out of the dock, not right. in and out of the harbor. So right. I guarantee you that's also going to change. Folks, you can get I'm my sure. commentary in two different places. You can go to my blog, thenationalpatriot.com, or rspradio1.com. Either way, grab the link and share it everywhere, especially if you're as annoyed by the conspiracy theorists as I am.
Yes. There was nothing conspiratorist about what happened.
You know, in fact, why don't you save yourselves a little time and effort? Go to rspradio1.com. You can get Diane's link. You can get my link all at the same place. And if you missed any part of tonight's show, you can also listen to the podcast by clicking the podcast button. There's a whole lot of stuff there, you know?
Right.
Take advantage of it. But with that, Diane, we've run out of time with tonight's show.
Okay, and so with that, I'll say nighty-night. See you guys on Friday.
Folks, have yourselves a great rest of the week. We'll catch up with you on Friday. Bye-bye.